I saw that Jeremy even left you a testimonial, so it looks like you guys know each other.
I taught him. I met him about 17 years ago, and most of his material is actually my material. And in fact, you know, some of that stuff he's copied and put into his own material, and is basically claiming that as his own.
I'm here today with my new friend, Michael Oliver. Michael is an internationally renowned sales trainer, coach, and best-selling author. He is the founder of Natural Selling Sales Training.
The question I pose to people, salespeople, is, you know, what's the greatest fear that holds you back from talking with people or makes you nervous or creates tension? You know, a lot of books is about how to overcome objections. Well, you don't have to overcome them. You can dissolve them. You can eliminate them right from the beginning. The framework is comprised of five different steps, for example, connecting stage, discovering stage, presenting stage, transitioning stage, and then we go into the committing stage.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network. Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with my new friend, Michael Oliver. Michael, what's going on, man?
Hi, Ben. Just about everything, and I appreciate you inviting me. It's looking forward to the next few minutes that we're going to spend with each other.
I've been looking forward to this since the moment we had met and first had a conversation, and it really is a dialogue. You believe in dialogue, right?
Well, very much so. Yeah, I think, the dialogue sort of opens up all sorts of avenues. You know, I talk about that in my book, and you might have read it, I don't know. But, you know, I learned from behavioral scientists that many, many years ago, when I first wrote my book 20 years ago, is that, you know, there are three levels of communication. There's telling, persuading, and so on, which is very ineffective. The next level is about discussion, and discussion is more open, you know, debate and that type of thing. But usually the end result is that someone needs to win or wants to win. And then there's dialogue where you just basically let everything go. You let go of your assumptions, prejudices, beliefs, listening to where the other person's coming from and working out where they are coming from, both from a logical and also emotional level, and start connecting with them at that level. You know, just while I had to lengthen this out, but it reminds me of Rumi. It was a Sufi saint who said, you know, beyond the wrongdoing and beyond the right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And that's exactly what we want to do, especially in selling.
Huh. Powerful. I'm going to introduce you to the audience member because they might not know you yet. Michael is an internationally renowned sales trainer, coach, and best-selling author. He is the founder of Natural Selling Sales Training. With over four decades in sales, Michael's approach, the Natural Selling Conversational Dialogue, emphasizes genuine rapport and self-persuasion. He seamlessly blends ancient communication philosophies with modern sales strategies, championing authenticity in every transaction. And one thing I found fascinating that I didn't put in the bio is you told me you were working with Deepak Chopra even and his team. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm not so sure that I was working with him, but got trained by the Chopra Center and himself. I just happened to move to La Jolla one time. I'd been training with Natural Selling for about 3 years, and it was resonating with a lot of people. I know I was as to sort of more of the whatever I want to call it, sort of more sort of a spiritual aspect of being able to communicate and sales. And I had these principles that I worked out, which were really principles. They weren't techniques, they were principles. And in fact, these principles formed the foundation of Natural Selling. And I was sitting on the beach in La Jolla, and I was reading his book called The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And I was just fascinated because I was saying, well, this is the answer. This is why people are resonating and coming back to me, is because of the principles that I was using sort of fit hand in glove with the seven spiritual laws of success, and the other way around. It was just a very much a mutual harmony. So I went to the Chopra Center and said, you know, do you have a course in on this? And they said, no, we never thought about it. So I was in the zone then. I mean, literally, this is unbelievable. I was in the zone. And about 6 weeks later, I got a call from the Chopra Center saying, you inquired about a course. We're just starting one. Would you like to join? I said, I'm in. I didn't even ask the price. I just, I'm in.
Yes.
And so I took the course. And one of my instructors sort of said to me, you know, when we were doing the exercises, he said, instead of doing what we told you, you've done something different. I said, yeah. He said, what is it? He said, well, you've actually blended your natural selling program into one of these laws and you spoke about it. And I said, yeah. And he said, that's pretty good. I like it. So anyway, we finished. And then I asked and said, well, do you think there'll be any training for this? Do you think there'll be any the ability to train in the seven spiritual laws? And the answer was no. And about 2 months later, there was a telephone call saying, we've just started this training course in the seven spiritual laws of success in the workplace. Would you like to join? My answer was, you know what my answer was, you know, didn't even ask the price, just was there. And then later I got a call from one of the instructors saying, I'd like to meet you for lunch. So we sat down for lunch in La Jolla and I started chuckling. And he said, well, I want to talk to you about something. And I said, I've got an idea what you want to talk about. And he said, what's that? And I said, you want me to do a course on this? Course blending my natural selling with what I learned, what I've been certified to do. And he said, yeah, how do you know that? And I said, come on, it was all predetermined, wasn't it? You know, it was all done. It was about sort of letting go of this whole thing. But anyway, I ended up doing a course called Natural Selling and the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success at the Chopra Center. So that sort of gave me a really good grounding into the fundamental mindset behind how to communicate, especially in selling. That was a long-winded answer, so I apologize for that.
I love it. I love the story, and I love your framework. I read the book, love the mindset shift, and selling isn't necessarily selling. It's just a dialogue. It's asking questions. It's listening and allowing the possible buyer to determine if they even want to buy, and in a way convincing themselves. And that's with the assumption that your product actually is great, Michael. And is there anything I missed in that kind of analysis? I read the book. I didn't put together the framework myself. So,
no, that's okay. Yeah, it turns sort of the whole idea of sales on its ear from the point of view that it's no longer about selling. You know, me attempting to sell you something, my product or service. It's about helping the other person buy, which is the title of the book. The title of the book is How to Sell the Way People Buy. And it's a mindset shift book. It's not about how to do it, but more importantly, it's the foundation upon which how to do it. It's like building a house. You need a rock solid foundation before you start building the walls and so on and the roof and so on and so forth. Otherwise, it'll just collapse. And so the foundation is based on philosophy, not on technique. You know, there's a saying that goes, you know, techniques are many, principles are few. Techniques will vary, principles never do, which is why you can learn techniques, for example, in one industry, but they're not transferable to another industry. You know, sometimes they are, but most times they're not. But if you base it on philosophy, and in this sense, you know, five natural selling principles, it always works. Because if something isn't going quite right, you don't look at the technique, you look at the principle. And you're violating one or more principles. And so now it's like hitting your head on with a beanie feather saying, okay, you know, sit up straight now and concentrate on your intention. You know, your intention is not to get the sale. Your intention is to help this person buy. And it's a very different mindset and approach.
We don't have to give away the entire framework in the course and the book in this conversation, but you said there's five principles. Can you touch on those?
It might be better to take one step back a little bit because the book is about how to sell the way people buy. Right. And it's basically comprised of two components. The first component are the three main reasons why you get rejected and objections. I mean, the question I pose to people, salespeople, is, you know, what's the greatest fear that holds you back from talking with people or makes you nervous or creates tension? And you probably will know, you know, the answer is that it's the fear of rejection and also the fear of getting these objections. You know, a lot of books is about how to overcome objections. Well, you don't have to overcome them. You can dissolve them. You can eliminate them right from the beginning. So there are three main reasons why you get rejected. And then there's the rest of the book is about how you can turn this around by not doing those things that cause the rejection and objection, and instead come from a very different way of thinking. And I back it up with all the neuroscience behind it as well. Because when I first started doing this, I knew it worked anecdotally. And I could only prove it anecdotally. But now there's been over the last decade or so, there's a lot of neuroscience, MRI machines and so on, which actually supports everything that that I felt at that particular time. So those five principles are really sort of based on your intention and how you go about it. So the first principle, for example, is about detachment. It's really about focusing on a person's needs. So it's really about the purpose of a business. What is the purpose of a business? Most people say to make money, make a profit, but it's not. The purpose of a business is to help other people solve their problems or to get what they want, need, or desire. That's the purpose of a business. Right. Your objective might be able to make money or to make money, but your purpose has got to be there. And it's an easy way to prove that, because if your business cannot solve someone's problem, is there any reason for them to do business with you? And the answer is no. So who's the business all about? It's about them, not us. It's always about them. You know, it's like, what's in it for them all the while? And so that's kind of that's where the intention comes from. Your intention is either to get the sale, which is how most sales training programs, even though they talk about, finding needs about and so on and so forth, it's always about the sale. Me, it's not about the sale. It's about helping you get what you want, and I will get what I want in abundance if I do it ethically, with integrity, and from heart, as it were.
Amen to that. What was the Zig Ziglar quote? Classic quote: the way to get what you want is to help people get what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you can help what they get in abundance, obviously you're going to live an abundant life as well. So it's not about closing them or persuading them to buy. It's really just about being a guide, right? It's about being a helper.
Well, it's allowing them to influence themselves to buy. I used to use the word persuade, and in more recent times, I realized, in fact, that word can sort of confuse a little bit. And it's all about influencing. It's about allowing them to influence themselves. Because as you ask questions, and it's not just random questions, there are several different types of questions you can ask, is that as they reply, they are also listening to who? You're listening to them, and they are listening to themselves. And so as they listen to themselves, they hear and feel what it's like to answer those questions. Mm. And many times their answers to questions are ones that they've never spoken before, they've never brought out before. And the moment is out there, the moment an answer to a question is out there, it now becomes out there, it's in the world. And in the process, a person will start processing, what they've actually said. And in fact, if what they're looking for is based on the incorrect parameters, you can talk about that, and they'll be open to listening. Why are they open to listening? Because you're open to listening, because you're being not selective in your listening. You are listening to every single thing that comes out, and you're picking up all the nuances and talking about those nuances. Big, big difference in just trying to listen selectively and try and move it through the conversation.
Do you find a lot of professionals don't listen well?
Oh yeah. We don't listen as a society.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you think about it, probably 10% of the time is spent listening. We spend 45% of the time waiting for a gap in the conversation so we can say what we want to say. Right. It's just remarkable. If you listen to conversations that go on, and I'm fascinated when I listen to two or three people, there's usually two or three conversations going on.
Mm.
And I have to be very careful, because sometimes I can get annoying when I'll break in and say, no, actually I don't think that's what she's saying. What she's saying is this. And the person, and that person would say, yeah, Michael's right. It's fun to do, but I can't do it really too often. You know, I mean, I slip into not listening myself sometimes and miss points, but you know, we're all human.
We're all human. It's the awareness and trying our best to listen as a professional, knowing that a lot of people don't listen well. Talking about listening, we have listeners right now. We're having the conversation in live right now. It's not live broadcasted, but there's no title. There's no thumbnail. I don't know what we're going to name it yet. I don't know if they're listening because of the title. I don't know if they're listening because they're a frequent listener of the podcast. But it's just on my mind, so I'm bringing it up. A lot of what you teach is very similar to a prior guest that I was actually a client of, Jeremy Miner, NEPQ, Neuroemotional Persuasion Questions. And in preparation for the interview, I read the book, I went on the website, and I saw that Jeremy even left you a testimonial. So it looks like you guys know each other.
Yeah, I taught him. I met him about 17 years ago, and most of his material is actually my material. If you look at, I know.
It's pretty darn similar. I was like, someone's listening right now, and what's going through their head is, why the hell hasn't he brought it up yet? Because I feel like it's important to bring up. I mean, it seems like it's almost a carbon copy of the same philosophy and structure.
Well, it is a carbon copy, because I was been training him in different situations for many, many years. In fact, he flew up to see me in Vancouver for 2 days, and I sat down with him. Those are sort of the early network marketing days when I wrote a book called How to Sell Network Marketing Without Fear, Anxiety, or Losing Your Friends. And in fact, you know, some of that stuff he's copied and put into his own material, and is basically claiming it as his own. But the truth is, probably, I don't know the percentage, but the vast majority of it is what I taught him. He chooses not to give any acknowledgement to that. And so, you know, whatever, that's fine. That's the road he has to travel. I'm not going to make too much of a judgment on that. So I guess indirectly I just did, but never mind.
Well, when did you write that book on network marketing? It wasn't a day ago. This is a classic piece by now. This was a while ago, right?
Yeah, this is 20 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, probably before Jeremy went to university and claimed that he learned all this stuff there, which he didn't. I mean, it's just, you know, you can look on the social media and a lot of people talk about it and just give copies. You know, I have a framework, you know, 5-step framework. And he's got exactly the same thing, slight variation, and also the different types of questions, slight variation, but basically it's all the same thing. And the process, the words are the same. So, but there's an essential element that's missing from what he does and talks about, and which is quite extraordinary that most sales training misses as well. And that is sort of the integrity of the focus on the other person, understanding what that's all about, which is mindset. I used to call it sort of mindset first, skill set second. And then I realized, in fact, it's not mindset, because mindset is general and broad, but it's very specific. It's natural isn't selling mindset first, skill set second. You know, I'll have people come to me, sort of, how do I do this? I said, well, before we do that, isn't it worthwhile to look at where you're coming from first? You know, what is your intention? What is your intentional mindset? And the mindset has to be, if you like, one of service, one of finding out, being empathetic, and letting go, detaching, literally. You know, one of the principles about detaching from the sale, detach from everything, detach from need to be right, need to present, need to tell, need to persuade, need to do whatever, you know, even the need to tell your wife or husband to do something, you know, just let it all go. And life becomes very, very quiet after that and very creative. And that's not that, while that's verbalized in most sales training programs, it's never actually actualized or explained. And there's a way to be able to do that. There's a way of creating that understanding. And the moment I find with my own clients, the moment they get that, then everything else just clicks into place. You know, that's the kind of building the house, the asking of the questions, the listening, and so on, the feeding back. It just comes quite natural, as it were. So it's quite extraordinary.
That's more of a spiritual discipline, more so than even just a sales discipline. Is that something you learned from Deepak, or where did you learn the importance of detachment?
I mean, the truth is, I accidentally fell into it, because when I started training this 26 years ago, people would come up to me and they would teach me. They would talk about, you know, I'd be saying things or doing things. And they, after a workshop, because I did a lot of workshops, traveled around the world doing workshops, and people come up to me and they'd explain to me indirectly kind of the fundamental universal, call it spiritual, call it energy, call it whatever you want, you know. And I learned from that. And so I started reading, started studying Wayne Dyer, for example, you know, the late Wayne Dyer. I started reading his books. In fact, a good friend of mine, Mike Lewis, who's passed, unfortunately, a brilliant guy, when I was staying with him in Phoenix, Arizona one time, he tossed one of Wayne Dyer's books at me. And inside was Michael Goodbody, something effective, you know, if you ever really work out what he's actually saying, let me know. And he was already there anyway. You know, he's one of those guys who's quite remarkable from his sort of so spiritual aspect. Some people have trouble with that word spiritual, but I mean, it's a resonance. And that's the whole thing, is that people pick up on your resonance. You know, if your resonance is one that you're attempting to sell or persuade, you know, externally persuade, and do things like, you know, trying to close, you know, soon, ABC, always be closing, which is, you know, makes me shudder. There was a judgment for you.
I agree.
Or trying to pressure someone to, at the end of the conversation when you're talking about commitment, they know whether you're in it for them or in it for you. If you change the intention and you're really coming across as it, you're in for them, you can, when someone says, even at the end, says, you know, I have to rethink about it, by dealing with the process beforehand, the process that you went through with this person beforehand, you can start talking about that legitimately. And you can start talking about why it is that they need to think about it. And a lot of times this is their own behavior, which is preventing them. Behavior based on the past. Behavior which, for example, could be coming from that they got duped by somebody, or they paid for something, never got their money back. They're so super cautious and so on and so forth. And you can talk with them at a deep level like that and help them break through that own mental barrier so that they themselves can free themselves from the prison of their own mind and take your product or service, because both of you know it's right for them. And it will help them to develop and grow their life even further. So it's like a double dip service, as it were, you know. That's getting pretty esoteric, isn't it?
I like double dip services. And realistically, kind of going back to where we started, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, they say. I'm curious. So Jeremy, as an example, made multi-millions per year as a commission-only sales rep, built an incredible training company that's helping a lot of people, and a lot of it was possibly imitated from you. Why is this so darn imitatable? What are some of those key frameworks in natural selling again that make this framework so successful for so many people?
That's a good question, actually. What would it be? You talk about framework. I mean, if you look at the natural selling framework, it's comprised of five different steps, for example, right? I'll go through them. There's a connecting stage, or stages, I should say, a connecting stage, discovering stage, presenting stage, transitioning stage, and then we go into the committing stage. Now, the question is that, you know, which of those stages are the most important? Connecting, discovering, transitioning, presenting, committing. And so, if you spoke with a standard salesperson who'd been trained in standard ways, they would say presenting to persuade a person, talk about your features, hoping that those features are going to be the correct ones and blah, 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 blah. Okay.
I was going to guess even closing, like the sale doesn't start until they say no. People want to present, they want to talk, and then they want to close you. This is what I find in a lot of sales training.
Yeah. You see, well, the reality is it sold, if you want to use sales parlance, or the way I look at it, where it's bought is in the discovering stage. That's where it's all agreed upon. A conversation is agreed upon there because you're talking at both a logical and an emotional subjective level. And that's where the communication comes. So in the connecting stage, you basically set it up. You set up the communication to show that you're not going out there to persuade them to do something they don't want to do. And you're not going to take a lot of time, except ironically, they'll give you all the time in the world because you're focusing on them, not as a trick, but you're focusing on them. So connecting stage actually sets the stage. The discovering stage with different types of questions, and you don't have to use all the questions, allows you to work out three main things and allows them to work out three main things. The first one is really getting sort of what it is that they want. You know, what are they actually looking for? Which is an outer logical need. It's just standard. It's like buying a car, for example. Then they say, well, why do you want a car? So the second stage, or the second objective, if you like, is about getting their, I say getting, allowing them to talk. Every now and then, my verbology slips back a little bit, but allowing them to talk about the inner logical needs, which is a why, which is why do they want this? But most importantly, and this is where most salespeople, just virtually no salespeople go, is to get that inner, unique, emotional, subjective need. And we all buy, as we know, for different reasons. We buy exactly the same thing for different reasons. Mm. And at the end of the day, it's a very subjective reasoning as to why we want something. And a lot of times people will tell you that. And they will influence themselves based on what they're saying because they're listening and feeling what they're saying. Sometimes they won't tell you that, but they're feeling it. They are acknowledging it inside themselves. And it's sort of an inner game, and it's helping them to tap into their unconscious, not even their subconscious, their unconscious. So it's to reveal to you and themselves the real reasons as to what's going on. And that's how you create a strong relationship right at the beginning. In fact, in my course, my online course, I actually talk about that you can ask five questions and you can get their emotional buying blueprint. Five questions right at the beginning of a conversation will help them reveal to you and help you to understand their emotional buying blueprint, their logic, their inner logic, and their emotional subjective side. They'll give it to you right away with five questions, guaranteed.
It's up to you. Me and the listener at home, we want to know what the five questions are, but I'm not asking you to give away 30, 40 years of experience that's in a course all away for free, but maybe just like a little piece for my niece. Well, what is one of these questions? What are the things I need to be asking?
So the first thing I have to ask is, do you really have a niece?
Yes.
Did you say niece or needs?
Niece, a piece for my niece. A little fraction of the action.
Okay, so you do have a niece. I have to qualify that first. Okay. By the way, qualifying is one of the seven different types of questions, and you can qualify in various ways. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give you a glimpse. The first thing is that once you've established the connection, okay, in other words, who you are, why you're there, and just talking about what it is that you're doing, is that most people go into a background question, and which is a logical question. But there's a thing called a needs awareness questions, which comes second in line about the list of questions. But here's the thing. You don't have to ask them, you know, one, two, three, four, five. Conversation is not linear. It's non-linear. So you have to learn what are those questions, the types, and then you can move around them depending on what the conversation is. So the first question to ask is a needs awareness question. And you're asking them, for example, let's say they responded to an ad. Very simple question. You just ask and say, so let me ask you before we begin, you know, what prompted you to to answering the advertisement and wanting to talk with us or wanting to talk with me or setting an appointment? It's a very simple question. It's called a needs awareness question, but it's also a very powerful question.
Oh, I was just looking. Yeah, I was just looking for an opportunity. It gets
or whatever the answer is, yeah. Whatever the answer, or you know, you could potentially use it with, for example, so tell me, what was it I just said that prompted you to want to find out more, you know, or what was it I just said that intrigued you? And it's sort of a very advanced background question. It's a needs awareness question, and from that you can then flow needs development questions. And then you qualify what is being said. And now you've set the whole frame. You've framed everything. You've framed where they're coming from. They know where they're coming from. They know what they want. They won't know what they need. They know why they need it. You do as well. And now you're just wrapping it up in the qualifying question. And now you're going to move into continuing on with your discovering to then sort of dig deeper and so on. But at that stage, most people have bought you because of the relationship that you've instantaneously pulled together, not as a salesperson, but as somebody who obviously knows what they're doing, has credibility because of that, and they want to know more. They're with you all the way, but you have to stay congruent. You have to stay in integrity, which is why my new course, I changed the date of the course, the day of the title of the course into the art and science of selling with integrity.
Talk about integrity and congruence then, because I think that's really important, because if you're a sales professional, you're a business professional going into an investor meeting, you're in a revenue-driven role, it doesn't matter. A lot of people will put on maybe a facade, or they'll memorize questions that are right in your course, and they'll have these strategies and tactics, but if they're incongruent or inconsistent or have bad intentions or poor integrity, all of the insight and tactics, would they still work? Or what's your thoughts on it? If you're incongruent, will you be successful?
The answer is maybe. I mean,
and, you can slip through the cracks, I can imagine.
Or a better answer is, it depends. Mm. You know, because if you're a hard-nosed salesperson, you know, and you're let's get on with it type of salesperson, I mean, you use anything. You use tactics, whatever comes up. And most people who are, well, not most people, I shouldn't say most, but people who are buying are kind of used to it. They expect the hard close, you know, they expect being closed. They expect, you know, whatever they say and come back with that you're going to try and overcome what they say to, and so on, you know, which, and all those things just create resistance, you know, and when we do those things, then we create the resistance. People aren't being resistant to us. We have created that. And so the thing is look at that, stop doing that. Do something different. If you've created the resistance, you take responsibility for that. And the question comes up, do you think you can create the opposite, do something different? The answer is, yeah, we are creators of our own universe. But, you know, so I think a lot of times people buy because they buy, you know, they're there, they want something or whatever, and they put up with it and they just buy. But if you want to get around kind of the low cost person and so on and so forth, then be different. Be different, because people aren't just looking for low cost, for example. They're looking for quality. They want to make sure things are working, and they have their own reasons and rationale behind it. And if they can't meet their own rationale and their own emotional objectives, then cost is not something that's important to them. And you can talk about that. I was talking with someone, what's today? Yeah, I was talking with someone yesterday or day before about they met the price objective. And I said, well, how do you respond to that? And it's at very early stages of training and coaching. And so there's a standard response. I said, well, you know, if you ever hear about that and that someone's shopping around, I said, there's a very powerful question you can ask. And I said, what's that? And so the question is, what's more important to you? Is quality and the fact that it's going to be up in the next 10 years, that it's going to be working, that you're not going to have someone maintaining this stuff over the next 10 years, or cost. And I said, if you hear cost, then your job, your duty is to say, well, then perhaps we're not the right people for you. That's coming from a place of integrity, because you don't want to compete in cost and you don't want to waste your time. That tells somebody something. And if they really are looking just for whatever, you probably don't want to deal with them anyway, because the chances are it's going to end up in grief somewhere along the line. You know, and I'm looking for a harmonious, easy life, so to speak. You know, that's where I'm coming from. Does that make sense? I don't know.
It does make sense. There's an example, I forget where I heard it from, but you know, the concept of buying a used bike, you can purchase a used bike and it's going to cost less, but what's the price of the stress of having to get repairs 1 year down the road and then having to take it back to the shop time and time again? And 5 years down the road, the price and the stress you put into that bike costs far more than if you had just bought the brand new one. So yeah, there's a big difference between the cost on the label and the price of choosing the wrong service provider, making the wrong decision.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's lots of analogies like that she came up. Anyway, I gave him a few more clues as to how to respond to that, even at the beginning. You know, even when you're setting an appointment, for example, you know, how you can set that intention, as it were. Right at the beginning, how you can set your intention and help them reset if their intention, because a lot of this is about helping them reframe where they're coming from, you know, not to manipulate them, but to help them reframe so they come from a better understanding of what they want and why they want it. But so I said at the end of the training, I said, so what are you hoping for now then? And he said, I'm not quite sure. I said, what you're hoping for is that the next person you talk with is actually going to come up with the cost issue, because that's how you learn. I said, that's how I learned when I first started selling. I couldn't wait to get out there and learn how to address somebody's question that I didn't know how to answer, or something that they were saying to me that I didn't know how to answer. And I had a brilliant person who used to give me the answer. And then I was thinking, I just hope this person will put up this bit of resistance, or they would ask me this question, you know, just so I could practice it and realize that in fact it worked. And that's how it progressively built up from there.
Fantastic. Where I've already read the book, I appreciate that I'm learning from you today and the listener gets to as well. How can we go deeper with you though, Michael? What's a great way to start?
Oh, appreciate you asking. That's nice. Thank you. Well, you can go to my website, simply called naturalselling.com. There's a courses page there. The first step is to read the book. It's only $7. It's probably worth $700, but it's priced at $7 just because when people pay for something, they usually take action on it or read, you know, so I don't give it away, cause it'll just probably never be opened or read. So it's $7. That's the reason I do that. And then the next step, and the last chapter, you can kind of sort of have an option. You can either work it out for yourself, or you can take my online course. And there's a link to the online course, but that long line course is also on the courses page, and we give a pretty helicopter view of what's actually in that course. But the key is, don't take the course first. Mm. You know, which sounds strange because the course is much more than the book, but the book is the fundamental foundation, and you can take the course, but you'll be potentially struggling with the foundation. So take that first. And if it resonates, then do the course. If you need then to go further and have your, what I call, your scripting, and understanding, go deeper. I call it, it's not scripting, it's guideline scripting, because you can't script something like this. You can do guideline script, but that's assuming every conversation is going to be the same. It's not.
It's not.
You know, it varies, right? Then you know, you can talk with me about doing one-on-one training and coaching, which is, for many people, that's kind of where the magic happens, as it were, you know. So that's the step. So go to naturalselling.com And it's pretty much all laid out there. It's quite a simple website. There's nothing kind of sparkling about it. It's just there.
It's simple. It's straight to the point. And again, read the book. Then you can level up to the course. If you want to go deep and have the one-to-one attention, Michael's here for you. I'm curious, as we close out, stage zero, before someone even goes reads the book, give us something from the conversation. You can reiterate something you already said if you need to, but how can we integrate some of this stuff into our life at this moment? What is stage zero? Well, maybe a mindset piece. What is stage zero as a sales professional that we need to start integrating soon as we log off today?
I'm going to take the first thing that comes to mind, and which is usually the best one. Let go of the need to sell. Let go of the need to persuade. Just understand what that means. Don't understand from a tech, from an intellectual level, but get to understand what that actually means. Letting go or detaching. It's one of Chopra's principles, the law of detachment. The moment you detach and you let kind of the, in a sense, the universe take over, which is why we meditate. You know, we meditate to stop thinking, because our thinking gets in our way. So it's like, stop thinking. And so part of that is to learn how to detach so that you can allow things to happen, allow things to work themselves. It's like having a glass full. You know, the moment you pour out half that full glass of water, what have you got? You can either look upon it as a half full glass, okay, or however you want to look at it, but there's now space, and there's space to allow stuff to come in. If your glass is full, you're busy, and you're down here, and you're intense, and you're trying to do things, persuade people, and you're worried about stuff, that glass will always stay full, and you'll never allow anything else in. Pour it out. Have the kind of the courage to let it go, which is what dialogue is all about. Dialogue is letting go of what you want to say, letting go of what you want to hear, and listening to that other person, and getting to understand them. And from the point of view of listening, you know, listening is a gift that you give, you know, and you don't have to agree with someone to listen to them, but you can listen to them, and you might find some stuff in there which you can agree on, which makes sense. And this is how we can all live together in better harmony. Another long, long answer to your question.
Beautiful answer. Michael, I appreciate it. Not every single listener to this podcast is in sales. And the reason they're still listening right now is this applies to all of us out there, especially what you just said. Give people the gift of listening. I appreciate the gift of your time here today. And naturalselling.com, it's really that simple.
Thank you. I appreciate the gift of you asking some very interesting questions. So sort of makes me think, and it's wonderful that you do what you do. I think it's wonderful that you do what you do. And if I can help in any way, and you know where to turn, so I'm always here.
You got it. And if someone wants to come to me first, send me a DM. I'll make sure you're in touch with Michael and his team. Appreciate you again. We'll talk soon. Michael Oliver.
Thank you.